Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
You know, maybe at some point, there is going to come a time where every single Laker game is not like the most dramatic event of the year. Maybe at some point, a Wednesday night Laker game will be just a Wednesday night Laker game. Except last night was not that night. Not with Anthony Davis and the Pelicans in town. Not with the Lakers riding a losing streak. Not with the Lakers desperately needing a win. That was a must-win game last night. Not when you consider that felt like the future of the team was literally hanging in the balance. You know, like, win last night and you live to fight another day. Lose last night to the Pelicans again, and we're talking about a total calamity. Like, a win there does not square them away, but a loss there would wreck them completely. For example, I mean, what happens if the Lakers don't make the playoffs? I mean, nobody expected LeBron to extend his streak of getting to the NBA Finals this year. But showing up as the self-proclaimed GOAT and having them in the four hole in the West earlier this season did create expectation. The expectation that they would at least make the playoffs. That's not asking too much, right? Not from the self-proclaimed GOAT. Not from the self-proclaimed best in the game, best in the world. Even if LeBron did show up and say that he had nothing to prove. Listen, missing the playoffs this year is not going to wreck this guy's legacy. But not making the playoffs or not making it out of the first round in 4 years with LA would sure as hell ding that legacy. So, regardless of what LeBron thinks, I'll tell you something else. Also, not being able to convince anybody who matters to come run alongside him also would be a very bad thing for him. Something else that might happen. Like, getting LeBron to sign on the line that was dotted was big for Irv, but not big enough. You get LeBron, and you get him for what he can do for you and for who he can bring with him. But again, the question, do other stars really want to play with LeBron? Kyrie didn't in Cleveland. I mean, yeah, Kyrie's a different cat. Newsflash, so is every other free agent that the Lakers are going to look to sign. Look at the upcoming free agent class. Hall of Famers across the board, but all different cats. And if you want to change out different for weird, you go right ahead. I'm not going to stop you. Kyrie, KD, Kawhi, Jimmy Butler. Do you really think that any of these guys are looking to come to LA to take a backseat to an aging LeBron? Doubt that. And what happens if they can't get any of these guys and they can't work a trade for Anthony Davis, the one guy who at this point does want to be in LA? Then what? Listen, you can't just assume that Anthony Davis is a lock to come to LA. I mean, Paul George was a lock to come to LA. And not getting him looks worse and worse for the Lakers every single day. That guy picked Oklahoma City over his hometown. He picked Oklahoma City and that team over the team and the executive that he grew up worshiping. He picked Oklahoma City over the tradition and the banners. He picked the Munster kid over Irv. And he's playing his ass off. Thanks, Alvin. So my point is, what if the same thing happens with Anthony Davis? What if Davis is shipped someplace else and just decides that he likes that better than LA? I mean, hell, Paul George did. And he decided he liked Oklahoma City better than LA. And then what about the guys you're left with right now? What do you do with the young guys who were caught up in the AD trade rumors in the first place? What if you can't get AD? Can they go through another year of that with the young players? I mean, that's your worst case scenario, right? LeBron kills himself to drag the Lakers into the playoffs where they get murdered by Golden State in the first round. Because you know that's what's going to happen. But you know me, I am here to keep it positive. I am here to keep it upbeat. So let's go ahead and do that. Let's stay positive. I mean, the old guy did activate once again in a win last night, going 33-6-10. And that seemed to activate the other young guys, like Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram. There were moments like this jam from LeBron.
Batted out to Rondo. A
little bit of resistance there at the rim by the Lakers.
No resistance defensively for the Pelicans against that.
And then you had this feed from a suddenly activated Rajon Rondo.
Rondo, look at him all the way out to LeBron, deep and down! That's a real driving kick.
And then this absolutely absurd piece of three-point ridiculousness from LeBron.
LeBron does turn the corner, goes to the rim, gets it. Three-pointer. Good! LeBron from the corner buries a three with a defender in his face. And the Lakers go up six with 31 seconds remaining.
It's my man John Ireland. He's good. John Ireland is really, really good. And a really good dude. Hey, John, no offense. I mean, you're great and one of the best dudes.
Hey, John.
But you know who's even better and probably a better dude? Another guy behind the mic talking about LeBron, Alvin DeLauro.
95-95, 3 seconds left. Cleveland inbounds the ball. Top of the circle, LeBron gets the ball. 2 seconds, 1 second, LeBron for the win. Oh, dude, yes. LeBron James. Please stay LeBron.
Game respecting game. A couple of three-point artists. Alvin DeLauro and LeBron. And yes, I said it. Look it up. Alvin DeLauro, state championship, and you will see what I'm discussing. What I'm talking about. Hey, Alvin, you're essentially irreplaceable behind the board right now. But if that Laker job becomes available, it's yours, kid. You take it. You earned it. Listen, if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, I'm not sure what's better, LeBron's shot or AD's reaction to LeBron's shot. Because sitting on the bench, he did just about the only thing that you can do in that situation. Make a face. You know, kind of like that face that I made when that valet crop dusted my car in a restaurant that I allegedly owned a piece of. That face. That's the face that AD made. Look, I don't want to be a buzzkill. And I'm not here to rain on your parade, Laker fans, or be that wet blanket, because I know you feel pretty good this morning, but I am telling you what you're thinking. I'm telling you what you're thinking, and you don't want to say. You know it feels like everything is at stake in every single game this season, and that it's going to be like that the rest of the way. You know that it feels like the next game is not about the next game, but about the next 3 years, and maybe the seven that come after it. You know all that, just as you know that the only thing worse than getting destroyed in the first round of the playoffs would be missing the playoffs altogether. And if you're not going to do it, memo to Laker players, if you're not doing it for the guys you're running with, man, you better do it for yourselves. Because if you do miss the playoffs, a number of you are going to be looking for another place to live and another place to work next season. And that would include the coaches. Then again, judging from the junk that Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell have been running and the way they've been playing, that might not be a bad thing. And who would have said that? Coming from a situation where you had Lakers on the front of your jersey and LeBron on the same floor. So no, that win did not save that season, but a loss last night probably would have ended it. They are grinding. Grinding. Laker fan, what do you think? Knowing what you know right now, is LeBron going to get any other stars to run with him? What if Anthony Davis does not come? Do they risk losing him like they did Paul George? And then do you lose a second year with LeBron and nothing to show for it? Yeah, I'm sure they'll say take it one game at a time. Good. Good. Because if they had lost that game, they could go on to one season at a time. Had to have it. But man, they had to work hard to get it. LeBron logged another 37 minutes.
Dude, yes. Please stay LeBron.
We are joined by Mike Young. Mike, it is good to have you back on the program. How are you?
Jim, I'm great. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Mike, let me reset this. You and I spoke in 2015, then we spoke in December of 2017, right after you beat fifth-ranked North Carolina in the Deem Dome. I know that was a huge win, but right now, you and I are talking about the program being ranked in the top 25 for the first time in school history. So let me ask you the question I asked you after that win over North Carolina. How about them Terriers?
How about them Terriers, Jim? I've told people for a long time now, I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it or walk things back. I've said for a long time, I've got a really good team, really good guys, and we've had some good fortune, but I've got a number of guys that can shoot. I've got a post player in there that I can throw the ball to and expect something good to happen. We're having a wonderful time. We'll get another big one in here tonight.
Car lovers like to shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock in brands you trust, like Wagner Brakes, Monroe Shocks, Superstar Batteries, Wix Filters, and more. They can even get those hard-to-find parts, most with free overnight delivery. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Mike Young, my guest. And Mike, you told my CBS colleague Matt Norlander that you were watching film with the players on Monday when suddenly everybody's phone started going off and then the word came in that you were, in fact, ranked number 24 nationally. What was that moment like for the team?
You know, I mean, it was great. It was awesome. That's heavy stuff. When you consider, you know, the people just ahead of us, behind us, for Wofford College to have that kind of recognition, it's been great for our team. It's been great for this basketball program. It's been great for our college community and the Spartanburg community. And it's warranted. They haven't given us anything. We've earned it. You rattle off, you know, 15, 16 straight, however many it's been. Consider we haven't lost in 2 months. 24-4, and those four losses are pretty good programs. North Carolina, Kansas, Oklahoma, Mississippi State. A lot to be proud of.
This is exactly what I was going to rattle off next. Mike Young, my guest. Mike, when you look at it, you are 24-4, and as you mentioned, the four losses are against, and let me reiterate, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Kansas, Mississippi State. You also administered a 20-point beatdown of South Carolina. Now, you and I have talked in the past about your willingness to schedule up. What have you taken away from those games against those powerhouses this year?
Complete games. Now, we haven't played those caliber people, you know, in our league. This league is really good, Jim. It's the best Southern Conference, top to bottom, that I've been a part of, and I've been a part of a lot of them. Just the attention to detail and finishing games. You know, people don't care. We lost, all right? This is about winning and losing. It's not close isn't good enough. We led or were tied under 10 in each of those four losses. Now, the wheels came off in Fog Allen Fieldhouse. That happens to a lot of people. But, you know, we were right there in each of those. And I think, you know, gave us the edge here as we entered league play that you got to play 40. And, you know, we've locked on to some things offensively. Our defense is very underrated. This bunch will guard you, and we're rebounding at a very high level. So, you know, a lot of positives.
Mike Young, my guest, and you're 16-0 in conference, and that includes a season sweep of Furman, who had previously been ranked in the top 25. And as you point out, Mike, the conference is as good as you've seen top to bottom. Now, you have not lost since December 19th. You already clinched the conference regular season title. So what is your message to your guys to make sure they're locked in the rest of the way and they don't let the hype get to them?
You know, I watch them. I'm very careful about it. You know, it was the enormity of the situation getting too much for them. No is the answer. There's a healthy amount of humility. They understand, and we talk about it. You get on your high horse and start feeling good about yourselves, and there's going to be a bat come across your kneecaps, and that doesn't feel very good. I've got great internal leadership. Three seniors that all play a lot of minutes and are really good players. And, you know, they take care of things in that locker room when I'm not around. They understand that tonight is the biggest game on our schedule. And, you know, they're having a great time. I mean, they're having a blast. And to continue to play well, to continue to play unselfishly and with toughness, you know, I have very few concerns about that.
Man, I'm having a great time talking Wofford basketball. Mike Young, the head coach, is joining us. One of those guys, Mike, that you're talking about, I'm assuming, Fletcher McGee. And he's been a monster for you again this season. Second in NCAA history in three-pointers. He's passing guys like Steph Curry and J.J. Redick. Can you take me back? When you were first recruiting him, what do you remember about that time? And did you know then how good he could be?
No, I'd be less than honest with you if I told you I did. I'm not that good of an evaluator, but knew he was going to be good. We caught a break now, Jim, and this can happen some. He played on a great AAU team. Ben Simmons, Antonio Blakely, who went to LSU, is now in the NBA. Barry Brown, I think, is his name, the young man at Kansas State who's terrific. We covet guys that can really shoot it. If you can't shoot it, we're not going to recruit you. And I thought this kid was one of those guys that just shot the leather off of it. What I didn't understand, his high school coach, great coach, Chris Mayberry, told me that nobody you've ever had will work like he does. And that's the truth. He went to a YMCA this morning at 8 a.m., day of game. He didn't feel quite comfortable with his shot last night and got shots up for 30 minutes before we went over to shoot around. He's a remarkable guy, and he has been an incredible amount of fun to coach and watch him develop and see him become the player that he's become.
Mike, listening to you right now, it's clear to me once again, you're never going to be satisfied. You're not going to be satisfied. I know you want to win every single game, but do you feel like you've already done enough to clinch an at-large bid?
You know, Jim, I had others have asked that question, and understand, and you do. We've never been here, all right? So I don't know what it feels like to know that we're in. This isn't the Atlantic Coast Conference where, you know, eight teams are going to get in. The only reference I have is going to Asheville and knowing you've got to win three games and represent the Southern Conference in the NCAA tournament. So I don't have those feelings. Oh, we've got to win one more. We're in. We've got to do that. Take tonight. All right, that's all we've got. Okay, let's play well tonight. Let's win tonight. We go to Sanford on Saturday. So that's how we're playing it. I have no idea. I don't want to leave it in anyone else's hands. This is about our team. You know, win, just win and play well. And that's our feeling.
That's it, Mike. You've got your destiny in your own hands. The last thing you want to do is have somebody else take a bat to your kneecaps. We don't want that. Wofford is at Chattanooga tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern. They are in the AP poll for the first time in school history. Mike, what a great conversation. Great to have you on. Good luck tonight. And I hope you and I are having a conversation again, not that far down the road, if you know what I mean.
I'd love to, Jim. I always enjoy your work. Appreciate you having me on.
Meanwhile, there are some important numbers in sports, right? When you think about numbers in sports, all the same numbers kind of come to mind. 300, batting average. 2,000, yards in a season. 3,000, base knocks for a career. Used to be 500, home runs, until guys started to juice. Put those numbers aside. We know all those numbers and what they represent. Right now, there might not be any numbers in sports more important than the following. Check out these numbers. Peek these numbers. 5'10 and 1/8. 207. 9.5. Those numbers are the height, weight, and hand size of Heisman Trophy winner Kyler Murray. And that celebration you hear right now is from NFL front offices who love this guy and who are losing their collective minds. The guy that they might take a run at. Maybe near the top of the first round. Maybe at the top of the first round. May not be as small as some people thought. So now we've got a comp. A comp that people can get behind. I'm not saying that this guy is these guys, but you can look at some comp numbers. For instance, Russ Wilson, 5'11", 204 at the combine. So Kyler Murray weighs more than Russell Wilson weighed when he was at the combine. How about this? Tom Brady and Drew Brees were 211 and 213, respectively. And Kyler Murray's 207. Baker Mayfield only had 9.25-inch hands. And dude spun it just fine last year when he was setting records for America's team, when he became America's quarterback. So if you want the biggest W of the combine thus far, it's what Kyler just threw down with a ruler and a tape measure. I mean, if this guy literally does nothing else in Indy, getting over on the measuring stick and the scale may make that a really successful weekend. 5'10 and change is bigger than teams expected. 207 might even be sturdier than teams expected. And now that dude's got that out of the way, he can decide whether or not he wants to push a few more chips to the middle and test his luck on the track or by chucking it around. But then again, given what he just did, does he really need to? I mean, I'll say it again. I said it last week. I don't give a damn. I don't care if this guy does not throw at the combine. If he does, great. If he doesn't, fine by me. Because ultimately, he's going to throw. If he doesn't throw at all between now and the draft, then that's an issue. But he will. And yes, I know that Baker threw at the combine and went number one overall. Worked out great for him. I also know Sam Darnold and Andrew Luck did not throw at the combine. Worked out great for them. Here's something else I know about Kyler. If you care about Lincoln Riley and you care about what he thinks and respect his opinion, check out these opinions. The coach of the last two Heisman Trophy winners threw out some crazy expectations for Kyler. 40 time, he's already clocked 1:44. Quicks, he literally referenced Tyreek Hill. Elusiveness, Lincoln name check none other than Barry Sanders. So if you factor all of that in, that's not a quarterback. That's Bo Jackson from Tecmo Bowl. So if you're looking for data, dude took off his cleats, dropped into some spandex, and ended the speculation. Take that for data.
Take that for data.
5'10 and an eighth, 207, and plenty of mitt to grip a football. So dude just posted the most important numbers in sports when he passed the ruler test this morning. More on that with Daniel Jeremiah in hour number three. Good morning. And all this guy did was step up and get measured. Didn't run, didn't throw, didn't jump, didn't lift. Really didn't do jack. Except take off his cleats, get on a scale. Daniel Jeremiah joins me. DJ, good to have you back. What's up?
What's up, Rome? I'm inside the building here at the Scouting Combine. It's kickers and punters. I figured you were calling because you want to just go just line item, right? One after another, just roll through all the kicker and the punter evaluation.
Not literally that, but I'd like to run through the evaluation of every single player eligible for the draft because I know you know all of them, Daniel. How much time you got?
Confession to make, bro. When I was scouting, we get to the special teams, and it was like we went all in the room, all the scouts, and just read our reports as fast as possible. Look at the special teams coach and go, we don't know what we're looking at. Just whoever you want. Just let us know.
That's it. No doubt. Daniel Jeremiah, my guest. All right, so do this for me. I was going to start someplace else, but since you mentioned that, from a front office perspective, like I spend all my time talking to these prospects. What's it like? What's it like? How are you approaching this? Flip this thing on its head. From a front office perspective, what is the combine experience like? I mean, do teams really enjoy this, or is it just an out-and-out grind?
It's a grind. I always enjoyed it. Some don't. I just found it valuable, Jim, because there's so many players that you grade similarly. You know, I always think you make a mistake at this event when you come out of here and you launch a guy way up or way down your draft board. But in the fall, you're going to have the same grade on several different players at several different positions. So, in other words, I've got two guards that I give the exact same grade to. You know, who would you rather have if they're both on the clock? Well, I get a chance to see them in the same line, on the same field, doing the same drills, and it can kind of help break some ties. So I've always found a lot of value in that, as well as, you know, get a chance to visit with these kids in the interview rooms and not only get a chance for their football knowledge and, you know, find out all the background stuff, that's all right, but you get a chance to learn the personalities. You know, how is this personality going to play in that position room for us, and how's that going to play in the group overall?
So generally, does it feel like when you sit with them and you're trying to talk to them and get a sense of what they're like, what makes them go, do you feel like you're getting the real from them, or do they feel like they're just all coached up?
They're very coached up, but you can try and fight your way through some of those canned answers. You know, it's become a lot more difficult to do. But you know, I mean, I've had so many different instances where we've had guys and the stories like, hey, who's the leader of the defense? Wow, the leader of the defense. I'm the leader of the defense. What are you talking about? I'm the leader of the defense. Okay, you guys watch extra tape? Yeah, we watch extra tape. All right, who runs the meeting? Well, yeah, I run the meeting. I go, all right, well, who holds the remote control? Who holds the clicker? Oh, it's the other linebacker. You're not the leader, bro. Like, what are you talking about? If you're the leader, you'd be holding the clicker.
Right.
So, like, just, like, fun stuff like that.
I like that. Daniel Jeremiah joining us. Obviously, if you're not holding the clicker, you're not leading anything. Listen, I was going to start by talking to you about Kyler Murray, but there is news regarding Jason Witten. He's going to return to the Dallas Cowboys. What is your reaction to that, and is that a good thing for them?
You know, it was interesting. It caught me off guard when I first saw it, but it makes sense, you know, from the standpoint where the Cowboys, you've got Amari Cooper who can stretch the field on the outside, so it's going to create some space in the middle of the field. Now, Witten at this age is not somebody that's going to win a lot one-on-one. He's not going to be a man beater, but he's somebody that if you give him some space, he's got a great feel, great instincts. He's going to find that spot. He's going to post up, and he's going to give his quarterback a nice, easy completion anytime he wants it. Now, he's going to catch and fall down. He ain't running away from anybody or running over anybody, but he's going to give you those 8-10 yards, you know, throughout the game and can be a value to you in the run game a little bit as a run blocker. Now, why Witten decided to do it, that'd be frustrating with all the grief he was catching for the, you know, for the broadcasting stuff. And maybe just says, you know, I still got a little bit left. Why am I putting up with all that? Let's just go play ball.
That's how I see it. That makes sense to me. Daniel Jeremiah joining us. He's at the Combine right now. All right, so if we go to Kyler Murray, when you and I talked earlier in the offseason, you said you had a couple of concerns. His commitment to football and his bulk, knowing that, what's your reaction to his measurements today?
I am on the train. The seatbelt is buckled and it's left the station. I'm in. So those concerns that I had, and you just mentioned them perfectly, Jim. He's done a great job of handling those. And when you watch the tape, you watch tape. Some guys do it, Jim. They'll have two different pens. You got a red pen and a black pen, right? So for anything bad you see, you use the red pen. Anything good, you see the black pen. If you did that when you watch Kyler Murray, Jim, there's not a lot of red on the paper, man. He's explosive. He makes a ton of plays. He can make every throw, and he's ultra athletic. So you're just hung up on size. If that's your thing, if you're just hung up on that, I think you're making a mistake.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us from the Combine. All right, so you've got the comparison between Murray and Russell Wilson. It comes up quite a bit. Now, Daniel, if you think back to when you were evaluating Wilson, when you were with the Eagles, how did that evaluation process go, and then what did you learn from that?
Well, I wish I had a mulligan, Jim, because I gave him a high second-round grade. I loved him when I watched him, and I had convinced myself that he was going to be right at 6 feet because there was no measurement on him. And I didn't think he really played small. You know, played behind that huge Wisconsin line, loved everything about him. Well, then he goes to the Senior Bowl, and he's 5'10 and change. And I had so many different buddies in the scouting community say, well, he's done. And I'd be like, what? He's like, look, 100 years of football, man. There's never been one like this. You think you're smarter than everybody else in football, and you're going to hitch your wagon to a 5'10 quarterback? So personally, I dropped my grade down into the third round. You know, in Philadelphia, we were close to picking him, not off my recommendation, just as a group. We liked him a lot. We thought we would get him in the third round, and Seattle took him just ahead of us. It ended up with a happy ending for the Eagles because we ended up taking Nick Foles, who ended up being a Super Bowl MVP. But I learned a lesson from then. I said, look, if I love everything on the tape, and I don't see it being a problem with his size, I'm not messing with it. I'm not gonna lower a guy based off that. Never gonna do it again.
Great story. Daniel Jeremiah joining us. He's at the Combine. All right, so now Murray does not have that classic NFL size. Dwayne Haskins fits that mold a little bit more, but you've got Murray above Haskins on your board at this point. Lay that out. How come?
Yeah, it's pretty simple for me, Jim. I like Haskins. He's a good player. He is a pure pocket passer, can make every throw. The issue is just when he's got to move around a little bit. The best way I can explain it is if you wanted to go buy a lottery ticket, it's much better to buy two lottery tickets than one, right? So with Haskins, when the play is called, he's got a chance to execute that play. You've got a chance to win with the play that's called. With Kyler Murray, you've got a chance to win with the play that's called, and you've also got a chance to win if something breaks down because he can make that second play. He can make you smart on the sideline with his ability to get himself out of trouble. So to me, that was the deciding factor of why I ended up with Murray over Haskins.
All right, so then again, you've got that big conversation right now. Arizona's sitting there at number one, and they took Josh Rosen last year. I mean, it would seem pretty obvious, Daniel, that no front office would want to trade up to get a quarterback in the first round and then come right back again the next year and take a quarterback again, especially when you're still not really sure what you have in the first guy you took after everything that happened in Arizona last season. All of that said, if you bring in a new head coach, and you know that new head coach loves Kyler Murray, is there any part of you that says, man, we're all in, screw it, let's just do this thing?
I mean, if they, you talk about how unique it would be to punt on a quarterback you took in the top 10 less than a calendar year later, that's not the most shocking thing. You hired a head coach who just got fired from Texas Tech as your head coach in the NFL. That's more of a brazen move. So if you've kind of gone bold, you might as well go all the way bold. And when I saw those comments, Jim, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, but when I saw Steve Keims say that Josh Rosen is our quarterback for now, one of two things happened. You went to Josh Rosen and you said, hey, dude, earmuffs for the next couple months. We're going to try and throw a bunch of stuff out there and drum up interest in this pick so we can trade. Or Kyler Murray's your quarterback going forward, because you don't take a quarterback that young coming off a very average to below average year and mess with his psyche and his confidence by not fully committing to him publicly. That makes absolutely no sense to me.
Hey, listen, you lay that out perfectly. Now, you're much closer to this than I am. I'm going to answer your question. When I saw those comments from Steve Keim, honestly, DG, I thought the first thing, he's trying to maximize the value of that pick. He's going to go to his quarterback and say, look, man, we're playing poker. You understand this? It's a card game. Just don't listen. This isn't about you. It's about maximizing that pick. That was my personal take. What did you think when you heard those comments?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's just from a historical, logical perspective, having been around this for a little while, you don't see teams give up on a quarterback after 1 year who's
right.
Pretty darn talented. So that's my first thought, but I just keep coming back to it. Man, if they are messing with people and trying to drum up interest, I pray they've had that conversation with Josh Rosen.
What's that do to a young quarterback? If he's hearing that thrown around and he doesn't know whether or not they believe in him, and by the way, it's not like it was all his fault last year. There was a lot of upheaval,
a lot
of turnover, right? They had a terrible year. He had no help in front of him. I thought the guy showed a hell of a lot of toughness mentally and physically. But if you're a young quarterback, even a guy like that, headstrong guy like that, what's that do to a guy's psyche?
Oh, it's brutal. I mean, that's one of the things that you always hear about. You know, hey, let's take it a little slow with these guys. You know, can they handle that failure? That's the most challenging thing for any young quarterback. How do you respond from failure? It's hard enough with what you're doing on the field and what you're putting up with and having to maybe hear from, you know, fans or somebody at the grocery store. But now you've got the guy that selected you that's not fully committing to you. I mean, that's brutal. So I've never really seen that before. And that's why I have to believe, if that's what they're doing, that they have to have filled him in on that.
Mike McCarthy, here are the opening few sentences to a report from Fox 11. Fox 11 has confirmed with Pulaski School District officials that former Packers head coach Mike McCarthy was involved in an incident with referees following his stepson's basketball game Tuesday night. It goes on, quote, we've also learned a formal complaint about the incident has been submitted to the WIAA. See, now that right there is a phrase that you never want to hear connected to your name. Quote, involved in an incident with referees. You don't want that, especially when you're at the game as a parent. Especially when you're at the game as a step-parent. You see, McCarthy's been a regular face in the stands at Notre Dame Academy's basketball games this season. However, apparently his actions after a tight loss at Pulaski crossed a line, according to people at that game. Pulaski's AD, Janelle Batten, said, quote, this parent chose to follow the officials and berate them, which is clearly unacceptable, end quote. But then it gets worse. The report continues, and I quote, some things were said, some language was used that we don't want in our gym, unsportsmanlike language, end of quote. Michael, come on, Mike. That report continues. When asked whether or not she has ever seen anything like that from a parent, she said, quote, not here and not in my time as an athletic director, said Batten, who has been the school's or the district's AD for 5 years. All right, look, I want to be fair about this. That is the AD of the opposing school, so maybe Mike is not getting the benefit of the doubt. But I'll be honest, there is video. The video from the security cameras is not that great. It shows a heavyset dude identified as McCarthy coming down out of the stands after a close loss, jawing at the refs, starting to walk past them, and then following them down the side of the stands as they left the court. And no, losers, I'm not here for you to come in with your beefy McCarthy beefs with the refs takes. Or your, hey, Rome, running after the ref looks like the only running McCarthy has done. As always, when y'all are busting out 4-minute miles and 6% body fat, then we will talk about the strength and the conditioning and the cardio capacity of a former NFL head coach. But not until then. Now, we don't have the audio, so I don't know what was said, but it sure doesn't look like it was a collection of compliments. I doubt the guy was shouting, good job, good effort. Good job, good effort. And while we do not have the audio, the video is not good. Not good at all on any level. This guy was an NFL head coach only a couple of months ago, and now he's screaming at high school refs and getting written up for it. Yo, you're not in Lambeau anymore. You're in the Pulaski High School gym. Act like it. You can't be working the refs at a high school game, not when you're a parent. How many times have I done a take on parents getting out of control at a youth sporting event? I mean, countless times. Except I don't recall ever doing a take about a former NFL head coach doing it. Listen, I know there's a huge crew of people who have turned this dude into the worst coach ever. He's not that. Far from it. He's definitely not that. He's got a Super Bowl ring. He helped develop Aaron Rodgers into one of the best to ever do it. He won 10 games or more in 8 different seasons. Trust me, this guy is not the worst coach ever. But I'll tell you what he might be. The worst basketball stepdad ever. Mike, I know that getting passed over for Adam Gase has got a sting. But getting gassed by the gymnasium crew at Pulaski High School has got to hurt even worse. Getting fired in the NFL happens.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens to us. Getting run from a high school game should not. Mike, relax, man. Have a cream soda or 10. You don't have an NFL gig at the moment. Treat this time like a sabbatical. Take a step back. Take a deep breath. Enjoy yourself. This is supposed to be the time for you to be healthier, to be more relaxed. Instead, you're yelling at a Wisconsin high school ref after a basketball game. Healthier and more relaxed, not heavier and angrier. Come on, man. Drop a line in the water, crack a case of root beer, and wait for the phone to ring. Not a good look at all. And there is no audio, only video. Is today the day he turns the corner? Dr. Dave in Chicago. What's up, Dave?
What's up, Remy Jome? I'm calling because Matt in America's hat needs to get checked. Matt in Vancouver, more like Matt in Van Hoover. Because not only do you suck, but your calls leave the room smellier than it was when you arrived. Do you even know that any other words other than bitch and fat? Why don't you consider these words, originality and creativity? You're nothing but a child, so inevitably I'll be seeing you in my office to fix those wounds that I just created. And Hawk, you better be careful what you say on the show, because your visual episodes of incompetence are just making you embarrassed.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that.
Sometimes
call.
You just got to give a guy enough rope. I mean, sure, I should have run him 2 sentences in, but sometimes I just want to see how it ends. Let's go to Las Vegas. Daphne in Las Vegas. Nice to have you, yeah. Daphne. How are you?
I have a take on the petulant Jason Witten.
Tell me.
I believe he's got a fire in his belly to go back to football, but I believe he's got a higher fire up his ass because he sucks at being a color commentator for Monday Night Football. He's no Al Michaels. He's not even anywhere close to Tony Romo. And he couldn't take it. So
that's some straight fire, Daphne. Come on, Alvin. Hey, Dr. Dave, that's how you do it. War Lady Clones. Listen, Jason
War
Witten.
Lady Clones.
All right, let's go to Wisco. Speaking of Wisco, Benny in Wisco. Benny, I would ask you what the weather is, but I know. I've seen video from earlier this morning. Benny, what's up?
Just like what a carny says at a city council meeting. That's a fair question, but I'm good. You good?
Yeah, that's a fair question. I'm good, Benny. You good?
Yeah, I'm good, man.
Good. Me too.
Ban the smack from Eagle River to Dundas to Wausau to Ashwaubenon to Chilton to Antigo to Elk Mound to the Pulaski High School parking lot. You're welcome. Rome, I heard your rant on Matt in L.A. the other day doing God's work by giving out golden tickets and signing Jim Rome autographs for fans and whatever else he was doing on your behalf. And it really inspired me to give back a little as well. So I've been doing some behind-the-scenes work as a representative of your show and your employing network. And I just got off the phone with management, and I got a hot lead on some Orchids of Asia Day Spa gift cards for the winner of Smack Off 25, complete with your logo and your likeness, of course. So what that means is that if you're a smart Smack Off betting man, you can go ahead and put all of your money on someone named John. You're welcome. Hey, speaking of Rogan Loam, War Jeff in Richmond pulling up to Pottery Barn for a massage because his dyslexic ass accidentally Googled rug and tub. Talk to you soon, dude. I'm out.
What, not even an outro at the end of that phone call? Anytime, Alvin. 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000. Thank you. No. You don't like that call. I don't like that call. Benny not a very good call. Has back-to-back top five finishes on the day that matters most. He could take it down. Benny's been in the top five back-to-back. He's got that kind of game. He could take it down. Jamie in Santa Barbara. If I'm not mistaken, it is senior night for the Gauchos. Jamie in Santa Barbara. Jamie, what's up? How are you?
Ben Smack, I'm doing good, thanks. Hey, I heard you talking about Mike McCarthy and the bigger issue of parents obliterating officials during interscholastic athletics. I got one good one for you. I'm a high school basketball ref, almost 20 years here. We go from Goleta all the way down to Calabasas in our region.
Dude, love it.
Because I've been doing it so long, I get some decent assignments. I got a good inner-city rivalry this year. Big, sweaty gym in January. And we tag four fouls on one kid for the home team in the first half. This kid was just coming up and obliterating other guys. There was one foul where we had to come together and are we going to upgrade to an intentional? We didn't. He was just challenging players, but just bodies all over the place. At halftime, we're talking about we gotta get this kid out of the game. And, you know, he's ruining the game. And sure enough, 2 minutes into the second half, we foul him out. My partner had the call. So I'm about to administer the free throws. He's telling the coach we need a sub because, you know, this kid is fouled out. And Jim, I've never been scared during a basketball game, but this is one moment I was terrified, right? And generally, I don't look up into the stands when people are yelling at me. I don't hear it. You know, I got thick skin for that type of stuff. But as he's telling the coach we need a sub, the crowd kind of dies down. And one guy behind the scorer's table stands up, and he screams out. So everybody, you guys are horrible. Like I said, I never looked. But I looked up, and who's up there? Don freaking Johnson with his carved-up grill. Scared the hell out of me. And so I want to thank you right now for giving me an opportunity to say what I'm going to say because I can't do it in that arena. Hey, Don, just because you went to the same plastic surgeon as your ex-wife and you came out looking like Rocky Dennis does not give you the authority to obliterate officials on the court during an interscholastic athletic event. Please pipe down. Your kid's got one more year. Don't do it, all right? Hey, that's all I got, Rome. Quick story.
Great story, Jamie. Thank you very much.
Good night,